We've all been there. You have a question about your credit card. You call the number for help and can't get a hold of anyone. If only you had a Discover card. With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. A real person. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Posing the age-old question, what's in a name, is the perfect way to introduce my next guest. And I cannot think of a name more fitting for a person with such a big heart and a whole lot of love to share. That's right. I'm talking about the one, the only, Allie Love. And by the way, that is her real name. Allie is the epitome of a multi-hyphenate. She's a Peloton instructor, model, dancer, Today Show contributor, arena host of the Brooklyn Nets, CEO and founder of her female empowerment company, Love Squad, and so much more. She is a one-woman hype machine on a mission to empower, encourage, and uplift. Through her workouts and with her words, Allie helps others approach their mental and physical well-being in a positive light, providing motivation and good energy every step of the way. Allie is someone who inspires. That is just what she does. And today, I'm talking to Allie about what inspires her, where she finds inspiration within her to share her light with the world, from her faith to her family, to the tried and true routines that keep her on track. The Allie you're about to meet is different from the one you'll see on screen. This is Allie Love, off the bike, shoes unclipped, heart wide open. She shares her love with me, and I can't wait to share it with you. I'm Hoda Kotb. Welcome to my podcast, Making Space. First of all, this is the coffee that we've been longing to have, me and Allie Love, yeah, right? We wanted to sit and enjoy a coffee. I'm so happy that I get to ask you all questions about your life because I've been totally curious. Before I knew you like so many from your Peloton days. Do you remember the day Jenna Bush and I were at a luncheon and we had never met you? And we squealed with delight when we saw you. Do you remember that day?
Oh my gosh, you made me feel like Beyonce. Like I was Beyonce and Cher at the same time.
We were like, Allie Love, and we realized there was already a line at you. So what I was struck with before I get into your life is the fact that you are able to reach out and touch people in this very profound way, often without ever meeting. And it's something beyond what you do, because a lot of people do what you do. It's something else. Describe what you think is going on in these interactions you have with people.
Well, one, I am very grateful when I have these interactions. Yeah. When you and Jenna screamed, it made my whole life because I'm like, Hoda and Jenna are like screaming for me in a room full of other women. It was just like one of those moments that I will never forget. It made me feel so cool. I was like, I'm cool, guys. But no, I'm really grateful for the interactions. I know that there's a responsibility that comes along with being a public figure, but more so when I am in people's homes, right? I'm taking up space. Their kids can hear my voice. They hear what I say. I'm very mindful of that. And so in terms of what do I think is happening, I genuinely think for many of us, myself included, the lonely part of me in those dark times, I'm connecting with those folks. I think the lonely part of me connects with some folks that may feel lonely or different or other or just imperfect, which we all are. But we have this desire to be perfect, right? To be our best selves, to be on and ready to go. And we can't sustain that, even day to day or even within a day. And so being in people's homes, in their minds, in their ears, a part of their feed, right? Social media, of whatever that looks like, I think they connect with my level of humanity, which is so important for me. I always say I'm private, but I'm always transparent. I let
That's
you know.
That's interesting. You're private, but transparent. I like that. Because sometimes you feel like you know someone. People know you from the Peloton bike and they hear your encouragement. But how do you decide what is just for you and your family and your tribe and what you put out in the world?
Well, I think the fine line for me is that my family didn't sign up to be in the limelight, in the public eye. They didn't opt in for that life. It came by way of me, or it comes by way of me. And so I'm very mindful to protect that space. I do tell stories on the bike at Peloton, like this morning. I'll talk about my dad, or I talk about my mom, or the piece of chicken wing that I roll up in aluminum foil to go to church with, you know, all the things. I talk about my sister, but I make sure that I don't not out them, but I don't give too much information about their lives so that they can live their lives comfortably. Same thing with my husband. So I'm private in that I protect my loved ones, but I'm transparent in that I'm having a crappy day today. Or today I'm feeling that tired. When we were talking about being a little tired, is like second wind is a choice.
Yeah.
That's where I am. It's one of those long days and I'm not done yet.
Right. You're still on. You're still rolling.
So I'm transparent of where I am and how I feel.
I've asked myself sometimes why I'm in a public job because it didn't really seem like me growing up. I've often wondered, why did I choose it?
Yeah.
I'm not even interested in the part of it that comes with it. So when you ask yourself, why did you choose a job that's public? You could have done a million things, obviously, helped a ton of people different ways. Why did you think you chose a public job?
Well, I think two things come to mind, and you talk about your parents. I think it's the way growing up, as I look back, right, we start to unpack as adults why we are the way we are in the best light, with true curiosity. And I look back at my growth, and my mom would always, she was so, and still is so proud of me. And I became a dancer, you know, at a young age, and my mom would, in front of, you know, my whole family, she's one of 10 kids. So it'll be every weekend we do family barbecues and family cookouts. And she's like, dance in front of everyone.
Oh, she said that?
Yeah. She's like, Allie can really dance, or like, do the monologue you did in class. Like, I'm like, mom, it was for a like school thing. It wasn't even real.
Yeah.
My mom was so proud, like profoundly proud of me that she would always want me to perform for everyone.
Okay.
And I think what I did at that age was associate, if I could perform and be perfect and like do these things well, then therefore everyone would love me. And so part of it is that as I moved to New York and started to go to college, I recognized that I associate love with this idea of perfection and or performance. Like, if you don't applaud me, then therefore I am doing bad or a bad person.
Yeah.
Which in isolation seems like not a good thing, but it was something that I recognized that wasn't necessarily all bad. It was one of those things where if you leverage and switch it around, it actually is for good. Is that my mom did something that was important. She let me be me and show the whole world who I was every weekend with my family.
Right.
She was just proud of who I was and who I am. And I think that to me is where I had to come back to that center a little bit of like, it's not necessarily me seeking love out in the world. It's me being myself and loving myself within the world.
Within the world.
Yeah.
A question I love to ask. Someone asked me this question once and it was so good that I was like, oh, I'm stealing that. I'm going to ask everybody. So close your eyes.
Okay.
And imagine your childhood bedroom. So look around. See what's on the walls, what's in the bookshelves, what are the sheets like, what's the vibe, and just open your eyes and describe it to me.
So my childhood bedroom, my walls are light pink. We got, as a kid, to my sister and I, to choose what color we wanted to paint our bedrooms, and so mine's light pink. My carpet is dark blue. Dark blue carpet. I have a small TV on a small dresser. I never turned it on. I didn't watch TV growing up, actually.
You didn't?
No.
Did you want to?
No, I had no desire.
Oh,
so it was probably unplugged. Like, as I think about it, the plug was like, it wasn't plugged in. I have a, you know, a little small twin size bed. And then on my wall was a painting of a little girl. She's sitting in a chair and she's like leaned over a book and she's writing as if she's doing her homework. And it's so interesting because my sister was in town, which you were so lovely to bring
her
own set.
I loved her.
It like made her whole life. She cried. But my sister brought this up 2 weeks ago when she was here in New York visiting me. She said, do you remember the painting you had on your wall as a kid? My dad's best friend, he used to take care of us when we were kids. He committed suicide when we were young. And so we lost him at a very young age. And so we were talking about him. And she said, remember that painting you would never, she's like, it's still up to this day. Because his name is Nick, He said, Nick gave it to you. And I think, and so we started to unpack this, and it was more in a celebration, a celebratory way of just like remembering him and how much fun we used to have with him and how he gave me this gift. And I kept it for so many years to this day. And I told her, I said, do you think I'm that little girl? And she's like, you're definitely the little girl. You're the girl always working. You never stop working, sis.
Even when you were little?
When I was little, I'm like, you know, doing my homework. I did my homework. I was on time. I was prepared. I was up early. I danced after school. Like, I, exactly how I am right now is how I have always been. And she was like, you're still that little girl in your painting. And I was like,
oh, was that hard to carry that as a kid, or was that just what you did?
I have a lot of energy, so it was probably necessary, to be honest. Uh-huh. I think everyone wanted me to do the most, so
they're
I
like, keep going,
did
Alan.
Not wear them out.
What was there anything else on the walls? Did you have posters?
No, it was just that
just
one painting.
Just that one painting.
I didn't. You know, I have friends who talk about like, oh, I had this iconic '90s person that I was. Yeah. I didn't listen to music. I had three albums that I listened to, CDs that I listened to. It was the greatest hits of Tupac, the clean version because I couldn't listen to curse words.
Okay,
Celine Dion. Yes. And then Avril Lavigne. Those are my three.
Wait, what?
On repeat. And then like when I got to college, I started listening to NDRE. Like that was like legit my childhood. It was music. I was dancing all the time. I just like did work. I was like doing my homework all the time. And then one of the things I used to do was cook. I wanted to really make curry chicken very well as a young kid. So I'd come home from school
and cook
curry chicken. And I've fed my family some really bad food in this child. It was like 6 months of curry chicken. That was terrible.
So your mom was the cheerleader.
Yes.
And how about your dad?
My dad, to this day, I always say he's like a hippie.
Yeah,
he's
is
like,
he?
Oh, yeah. He has long hair all the way down to like his waist, blonde. He has blue eyes, wears glasses, always cracking a joke.
Right.
Always something. He's always like saying something funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he's very free spirited.
Is he?
Like he is. Yeah. My mom is more structured and, you know, she's religious and she plays by the book, you know, and we're going to do what we're going to do. We're going to do it well and you're going to be good at it.
Mm-hmm.
Like we had a rule. If anyone in class could get an A, it should be you.
Wow.
That was our rule.
Wow.
Whereas my dad was like, who cares?
Like, do what you want.
He's like, if you don't get an A, you're fine.
Yeah,
like, you're okay. Like, my dad is to this day.
That balance.
Just like, and they, yin and yang. And it worked out where, I always say I work hard, but honey, I party harder.
Yes.
Don't let it fool you.
Growing up biracial, how was that for you? What were the challenges and what were the kind of best parts?
I didn't realize for a long time that I was like biracial. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a conversation. It was not until one time my sister woke up in the middle of the night and she ran into my parents' bedroom and she was like, Mom, you're black, Dad, you're white. Like she had.
How old was?
She was probably like five or six.
Yeah.
And it was one of those revelations. And I think that was the kind of unlock for us and that we started to talk about it where it's like, oh, what does it mean to be white? What does it mean to be black?
Mm-hmm.
What does it mean to be both?
Mm-hmm.
Growing up in school, there were very many moments where, you know, I was bullied, just like most people. Unfortunately, we go through those phases where kids don't know any better. And I'm pretty sure if we did, we'd probably do better.
Mm-hmm.
But it would be like, you call me white girl, or you're like, oh, you're not black, or, you know.
Right.
It was when I'm never like white enough for the white kids. I'm never black enough for the black kids. So I used to call myself, again, what did I know? I was like, oh, I'm gray.
When that's you what you said?
Yes.
Oh.
When you take a black and white crayon in school because you're coloring, you're like, you get gray. It's like, well, I'm gray. I don't know what. To tell anyone.
Oh, that's so beautiful.
And
what, did you talk to your parents about it, or did they?
My mother was just like, you are who you are. She's in my mom to this day. It doesn't matter what color you are, you're a child of God. If anybody asks you what color you are, you're a child of God. That's it.
That's beautiful.
That's all you need to know. That's all you need to worry about. And I really did. And she did tell me, she's like, you have two loving parents, like you have a good life. And that's what I lean into, to be honest. I didn't really engage in those conversations around my race, my nationality. I didn't shy away from them because of being nervous or scared, but I didn't think they were important. And my mom made sure when I was very young, by the age of like 8 to 9, those are not important conversations.
Wow.
People are going to have them with you.
But
you're a child of God.
Important.
You're good. You're good.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah,
you know, my,
to
if
have
my mom
that.
Tells me that I'm good.
You're good.
Trust me. She's the only one that I try, you know, that I talk to.
Someone said to me, they said there's something that she described as a life sentence. It's a sentence that someone tells you when you're a child and it stays with you throughout your life. And for some, it does become a life sentence. It becomes what defines you, how you identify. And sometimes that can come from someone you don't even know very well, but it's like an ouch that when it comes again, you feel it like a wave. Here it comes. Is there anything that comes to mind for you?
It's when I was a kid, someone in my family, coming from a good place, we were playing a game and I think we were putting together a puzzle or something in one of my rooms. And they're like, you're not a finisher. It was like an older cousin. You're not a finisher. And as a kid, I'm like, what? Huh?
What does that mean?
Yeah, what does that mean? Yeah. They're like, you don't finish anything. For some strange reason, this was like when I was really young.
You remember it.
I remember that. Like to be called that a person that doesn't finish or see things through. I don't know. I didn't even understand it at the time, but I knew it wasn't good. You know, I was
like,
no.
Oh, I'll prove that person.
And exactly. And
isn't that interesting?
I think about it I do have a new rule as an adult. I will not finish bad books and I do not have to finish bad movies.
Yeah.
Time in life is too short.
That's
if the book isn't good, I'm cutting it halfway through and I'm letting you know, don't read that book.
Good. Okay.
You know?
Fair enough.
So I have feel like I've taken that back a little bit of not trying to finish for the sake of that title.
Yeah.
But I do keep it in mind in moments where I do want to give up.
Yeah.
Like sometimes I'm teaching class or if I'm running by myself.
Yes.
I'm like, I want to give up. And it's just like, I remember those words and I use them for energy.
By the way,
I'm a finisher.
That's really good. There's a script. I think each of us has a script that we have for our lives. When we're 20, there's a script that we say, I'm a this. When you get to be in your 30s, you're like, oh, here's my script now.
Yeah.
40s is different. 50s, every decade, your script evolves. And some people get stuck in their same script. It's like you're chasing the same thing you've been chasing, but what are you doing? Because it's been 20 years and you're telling the old stories when we're here now.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like your script obviously has evolved. You started working at the Today Show, which is such a thrill for us. It's been evolving on, you're kind of on a rocket ship, I feel like, and you're hanging on and you're doing an incredible job. But if you were to describe this script, chapter, how would you categorize it personally, professionally?
I'm reclaiming my confidence. And I know to people who hear that, they're like, oh my God, are you kidding?
Yeah.
Allie Love, she's really confident. I'm reclaiming my confidence in that I feel like I've been on in the last couple of years, and I was talking about this last night at a Love Squad event. It's like the last couple of years, I feel like I lost myself a little bit.
Mm.
I started comparing myself a lot.
Mm.
You know, you talk about it. Social media it's just tough. It's tough on kids. It's also tough on adults.
Mm-hmm.
And I started like comparing where I was right now in my career and then in my personal life and looking at all the things I didn't have,
mm-hmm.
not necessarily focusing on what I do have. And I would compare it to where my colleagues are or where people that I followed for years, where they are and how I either am not there or like they're progressing so much quicker than mm-hmm. I am. And I recognized that it was killing my confidence.
Mm-hmm.
It was making me immobile.
Mm-hmm.
I would be scared to reach out to people to go to coffee or tea, mm-hmm. right? Like to have a chat. Cause I'm like, well, nobody really likes me. Like, and I came to the conclusion that I wasn't really in love with myself anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like who I had become
mm-hmm.
because I became a product of the comparison, which is like a shell of myself. And I'm, you know, granted, I know how to teach a Peloton class and I know how to be on camera, so I'm not faking it. I know how to do these things well, but I wasn't doing them fully.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I'm rewriting my script right now to be more confident.
Mm.
To be more secure, to be more grateful. Like, and we hear this all the time. It's like, well, you got to be grateful. Being grateful is active.
Mm-hmm.
You're not waking up and saying, the birds are chirping and it's sunshine and everyone.
Yeah.
No, I don't wake up like that. I don't think anyone or rarely people do. I wake up and it's a choice and I'm going to be grateful.
Mm-hmm.
I'm grateful that I can move today.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to like, I got to yank myself back. And I talk to myself on the way in to mm-hmm. the Today Show. You belong there.
Yeah.
They like you. They want you there. You have
mm-hmm.
something to offer.
Mm-hmm.
You're here to help people.
Yes.
This is not for you. This
yes.
is for other folks
yes.
too.
Yes.
So I think that that's where I am, is like rewriting the script and reclaiming my confidence and like me being myself and liking myself a little bit more. Like I really, you know, showing up how I am, a little quirky sometimes, like all over the place, talking fast. And,
yeah.
But
being
also
you.
Just, yeah.
Being
so
you.
I feel like I didn't do that for the last 3 years.
I think it's so, because I've been having this exact conversation with other friends too, who are going through a very similar stage. And they're talking about like, what if I'm 100% myself and people don't like that person? Because it's one thing not to like the TV or the this, but what if they don't like me? And I was having a conversation with a friend and I said, so you're about to be who you are, who God created,
mm-hmm.
and you're worried that Mary Smith,
mm-hmm.
who you don't know, is not going to like the person God created. You're worried about Mary Smith on Twitter and on Insta, that she might not like
who
the person God made.
Wow.
And she looked at me, and I was talking to myself. But it is, I think we're all in the boat. We're all in that boat together, like trying to remember why we're here. And God in your world is your world.
Yeah. Well, got me. I'm like all teary-eyed because I'm like, who am I not to like who God created?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, who am I to not? Wow.
But but faith has been your tent pole. I mean, you have a bunch of tent poles in your life, but you've needed God, obviously, throughout, sometimes more than others. Mm-hmm. Tell me about when you were a little girl, you were just 9, I think, and something life-changing happened.
Yeah, when I was 9 years old, I got hit by a car. We were at one of the family gatherings every weekend, like I talked about. And I went to go get it. You know, you hear the magical noise and there's an ice cream truck coming. And you're like, can I get a dollar? Yeah. Can I get $2? And so I go across the street to get an ice cream. And as I'm walking back across the street, you know, I look both ways. I'm 9 years old. I follow the rules, as I told you. And it just happened where the timing was the car was parked behind the ice cream truck, drove out, hit me. I flew up in the air, body landed on the top of the car. And then I rolled to the side of the road. I broke my left femur, scarred up my body, cracked all my teeth. And, you know, I was passed out and my whole family came out. The ambulance come, I go to the hospital. And I'm in traction for 5 days because young kids don't break their hips. So they have to ship something from China to be made to do surgery. I'm losing a lot of blood. And the doctor pulled my mom to the side and she was just like, he talked to her and he said, you know, it's not looking good. She's in traction. This is a long time for her. She's so small. Mm. And she's losing, you know, it's going to be tough. And my mom came back and she spoke to me. She's like, I have to talk to you. And I was like, yeah. And she was just like, you know, you have two options here. You know, you can let go and go on because it's really hard. Like, I can't change places with you. Or you can fight and you pray and fight for your life. Like, but if you're going to, you know, if there's fighting to be done, you're going to have to fight for your life. I can't do it. And I remember looking at my mom and I was just like, I'm going to pray and fight for my life. That's, you know, that was what I was going to do. And my mom doesn't remember exactly like that. She's like, I remember it a little different. And I was like, I'm telling you, this is the conversation we had. I remember looking out of the window in the hospital room thinking like, God, we have to come. Like, I have to come out of this.
Yeah.
Like, it was like a bargaining thing as a little kid. You know, we grew up in a house. My mom talked freely about God to this day. It was part of my experience. And I just remember making a deal with God and say, if you're real, I'm going to live. That's the only way. And obviously as a kid, would I know if I didn't live, if it was real, you know? But I just remember thinking like, if you're real, like you're going to save me and I'm going to live. I'm going to fight. My mom says fight. I'm going to fight. Mm-hmm. And I often say those two things of praying and fighting for my life, I've never stopped doing since the age of 9. In that I came out of that and I was like, I know what it feels like for your life to almost be taken in a second. Mm. So that's why I'm all over the place. I'm everywhere all at once.
Yes.
Because I get it. Life is so short and it's so temporary. Mm-hmm. So I want to enjoy it. I want to have a good time. And faith is the epitome of that. It's like, maybe I negotiate with God once in a while, which I know we've had some tough conversations, me and God recently. But it's like, I have to trust that when I look back, and I was talking to a friend of mine, and when I look back over the course of my life in the big moments, is that God blesses you in a pattern. Mm. And one of my girlfriends was talking about this. Mm. She's like, look at the patterns in which you were blessed. How did you react? What were you doing? Did you have to really fight for them? Mm-hmm. Did you have to be patient? Did you have to be quiet? Mm. Look at how God blesses you in the big moments and operate within your pattern of blessings.
Mm. That's good.
Yeah.
That's really
and
good.
So that's what I do is like, I have that faith of let me operate in my pattern of blessings because God has never failed me. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, would not be a thing,
right.
You know?
Right.
And for me to live such a fulfilling life.
Yes.
I mean, come on.
You're like living the life.
Yes.
You're living the life. That was a life changing moment for you. When you look back on your life and you were to say, this is the time where I was challenged the most. What memory or thought comes to mind for you?
I think I'm being challenged right now the most. Mm. And maybe because I'm in it, it feels greater. Mm-hmm. So I don't have anything to like, I have past things, but maybe because they're not close in proximity that I don't think that they're the most biggest thing right now. I don't know how you do it, and it's a learning curve for me. There is something to be said about genuinely wanting to be the person I am, being strategic around my business so I navigate the world, wanting to be liked by the world without losing myself, wanting to protect my family and, you know, be there for them. Want to make my mother proud, you know, make my grandma proud, which is important to me, my husband to be proud. Like, it's this thing of wanting to be almost all things to all people, but still be myself, which is highly impossible.
Yeah, it is.
And so, and do everything that I do, which I love doing, so publicly when sometimes I'm hurting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
That's hard. That's
so
hard to do.
I think that right now I'm learning how to operate differently as an adult, as in a new space in my life, dealing with some things that aren't going great, but that I know will, you know, that I have faith that will pan out. So I think that right now, I think I'm in one of those greatest challenges because I'm being shaped. Like, God is molding me into the next version of Allie. And I'm fortunate because I have my husband there who's like my biggest cheerleader. And he is just like so, I mean, so funny and so cute. And he's just like, you're fine. I say this all the time in my class. I always look in the camera and I say, you're okay. I always say that.
Yeah,
and every time at home, he looks at me and goes, you're okay.
You're okay.
And I'm like, it works. And I'm
how
like, you're right.
How did you know he was the right one, by the way?
How did I know he was, he's so smart.
Yeah.
I think he has the right one came along because it's like a trifecta for me. He has emotional intelligence, which is very hard to find sometimes. He is actually like, he has IQ, right? Like intellectual intelligence, and like, that's incredible. But then there's like this part of him that is so witty and hilarious and just nuts.
Right.
I vibe with very well.
Yes.
So in my, like in my house, if you've ever seen some of those memes where it's like one dog that just lays flat on the floor and then the other little dog just biting on them. Yeah. I'm the little dog biting on him and just like dancing around the house. And like, then he'll just crack a joke. And his wittiness and timeliness is so like funny. So I just felt like that, the combination of being emotionally connected and emotional intelligence for the folks around us and then really being intelligent, being able, I always say he can solve the world's problems in an apocalypse.
Wow.
Yeah.
He's that guy.
He's that guy. He'll figure it out.
Coming up, Allie shares the practices that feed her soul and the routines that guide her, including the one question she asks herself every morning. Stay with us.
Every parent is a busy parent. There's enough on your plate without piling on your kids' homework. And considering how much teaching methods have changed, most of us are a little rusty anyway. Consider IXL, an excellent resource for homework that can make a huge impact on your child's ability to learn. Backed by research, kids using IXL are actually scoring higher on their tests. Our techniques help them master topics in a fun way, complete with positive feedback. We're seeing improvements all across the country as IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. And IXL is also very affordable. 1 month of IXL costs less than the typical hour of tutoring. On just one website, IXL covers all the kids in your home from pre-K to 12th grade. Sign up today to get 20% off your membership at IXL.com/HODA. That's IXL.com/HODA.
Back to you being nine and being hurt and going through all that. To imagine that that little nine-year-old would turn into a professional dancer is beyond comprehension. I mean, like, so that you, some kids have to practice. You had a bunch of other stuff to overcome. Did you ever think to yourself, because you loved dance when you were a kid, well, that dream's going to have to be on hold because this is God sending me a message right here. I've got another talent. I must, you know, because I'm not meant to do this.
I don't know if I thought that I wasn't meant to do it, but I also don't know if I thought I was meant to do it. I think that I was just going to go for it. Like, once I was nine, it was like, there's nothing like,
so
it doesn't matter. Yeah. Like, all of this could be gone. So I had this little bit of a fearlessness to get out in the world. And the way I found dance was after I got hit by a car, I was homeschooled. So it was just by myself for a year. And to kind of ease
back
into—
Your mom taught you?
No, we had like a teacher that would come. And I would put her through the ringer as a little girl.
How come you were homeschooled? Just because of the medical stuff?
I couldn't move. I couldn't walk.
You couldn't walk.
So for 1 year, I had on a cast. I had a body cast that would go around my waist all the way down my leg. So I couldn't go anywhere. I couldn't do anything. I couldn't play with kids, nothing. So I was in the house. Most of our family would come over to our house for the weekends, like I told you, and because you couldn't take me. And then after 6 months, they cut it down to where it was just from the knee up, but still around my waist.
Oh, my gosh.
So it was a whole process.
So you couldn't go, you couldn't do anything.
Anything. Exactly.
How did you not go crazy?
I think I did, which is why I think I put that teacher through the ringer.
Yeah.
I should find her and apologize to this day. I would not listen to anything she said and like start talking about anything random.
Yeah.
My gosh. But then once it was time to like ease back into society, it was summertime and my mom's best friend, who's like a second mom to me, Miss Lizzie, her daughter, Jasmine, was in a program. She's like, we're going to put Allie in that program too. And it was just like
dance program?
Yeah. Well, it was like an after school, like a summer program, summer camp. And so we'd go to a day summer camp and they offered dance. And I loved it. I fell in love.
You did?
Yeah. And at the end of the summer, you did a performance. So you had to pick what performance you want to do. And I'm like, I'm going to do dance. And I remember the dance teacher going to my mom and was like, I think your daughter's really special. She has something. And, you know, my mom kind of joked and was like, I don't know. And I was like, no, mom, I love it.
Yeah.
And I fell in love with dance. And I was like, I'm going to be a dancer. I'm going to get on stage and I'm going to do this. And I did. I started doing, I went to middle school for dance. And then high school, I had to audition for New World School of the Arts.
Mm.
And I remember, which was interesting, I auditioned for these high schools for their dance program. And I really wanted to get in. Hoda, I really wanted to get into New World. It was the best.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was like, again, God, come on. Like, you got it. Like, give me something here.
Yeah.
I go to the audition. I give it my good old college try as a kid. We get a letter and I was on the wait list.
Mm.
And I was like, okay, you know, making
good.
Up my mind.
I got it.
Like when, when we go back to school, I'm going to go to a different high school. And I remember my dad calling I was with one of my friends, calling the mom, was like, can I talk to Allie? This was like a couple days in. So I'm thinking, I'm in trouble. Did I not do the dishes?
Yeah.
My dad gets on the phone and he's screaming. And I'm just like, what is going on?
Right. What is
he's like, you got in. He's like, New World sent you, they literally sent a letter and said they made a mistake.
Oh my God.
They sent you the wrong letter.
Oh,
it was like,
geez.
I was like, are you kidding me? He's like, you got in, you're going. And it forever changed. And I was like, remember that faith we're talking about?
Oh yeah.
I was like, this is a sign. I went to that school, forever changed my life.
Oh my
Moved to
gosh.
New York, went to Alvin Ailey Fordham.
Oh yeah.
Got a bachelor's in fine arts and I started dancing. Like I just fell in love with it. And again, I'm not sure if I chose it technically or it chose me, but it was a course where I was like, I'm just going to try it.
So you majored in dance and you minored in theology?
Theology, the study of religion. And I wanted to know why we believe what we believe.
Yeah. Was it because you were questioning or wanted to learn, or was it you just liked the field? What was it at that time?
I moved to New York, and New York is such a special place.
Yeah.
And everyone was so different in school. I wanted to know why my mom thought what we believed was the right thing to believe versus like my roommate's mom, who's also awesome, and they believe something different.
Yeah.
And so it was more of how do I coexist in a new state, a new city that I don't know very well with people that are highly different than me, but I know that I love these people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it was more of figuring out the roots of what I believe and the roots of what other beliefs were, so I could understand what is that common ground. So I can articulate, and I don't want to compromise what I believe, but I don't want you either to do so.
Right.
And so how could I relate and be in a space to coexist and facilitate a good environment? So I was very keen on that.
Did you find like there was common ground? Is that what you learned at the end of the day?
Yeah. I think most people think that. Not all, but many people can say like, the root of many of the stories, right? When you go and look back in the history and the way things are written. And genuinely, I think above all, when you look at the epitome of what each book is about, it's based on fundamental principles of that love, of obedience, which is interesting. Like this idea of love, obedience, of sacrifice instead of and suffering in some regard, they're all key principles that come up in our lives. So it's like, how do we deal with them collectively? Like we're all going through different things, but similarly.
Yeah, I love
that. You know what I'm saying? Like your thing is your thing, and I'm going through something, but we're going through it at the same time.
Yes.
And so I found like it brought me back to kind of like The Alchemist, where it's like I took that long way home and I was like, okay, we can all do this together.
To be evolved, I feel like in this world and the way everything's changing is you have to make an effort. You can't sit around and say, you know, you're changing as you're going. So you have tools, you have books, you have I don't know if you're a therapist. I'm not sure what you're doing. But what is your boilerplate so that you realize? Because I think, like, to me, if you're not hungry, learning, you're sort of missing the boat. But what are your tools? Like, what do you use day in and day out?
So the number one thing I think that I would probably highlight, because I think it's accessible for most people, is Audible. I listen to a lot of books. Mm-hmm. I do go to therapy. Like, I do have my group of friends that I cry to mm-hmm. and that I talk to, which is so important.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I recognize that I find peace is when I can get on and find a book mm-hmm. and listen to it. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, there's a saying, it's nothing new under the sun. I know that while I'm going through my unique experience, there are methods that experts have talked about on how to handle this or how mm-hmm. to start thinking about this mm-hmm. or to gather perspective. And so I do that. In the moments that I feel frustrated mm-hmm. or I don't feel, you know, I'm dealing with some anxiety, I will put on my headphones and I'll listen to a book. I'll listen to a sermon. Mm-hmm. So the last couple of days, I listened to Stephen Furtick, a couple of sermons just to get me back grounded mm-hmm. on, like, what is important? What do mm-hmm. I need to know? And for me, those are resources that are accessible to right. many people.
Yeah.
And that's the thing I hold true. It's like, it doesn't have to be fancy. It doesn't have to be fly. No. It doesn't have to be any of those things.
Just something that speaks
this
to
is,
you.
Yeah, this is the thing.
Like, it's like a one
catalyst hit. For change is conversation. And even internal dialogue can be that conversation for that change.
Yeah.
And so I open my ears and my heart to those books and to the sermons to have that, to find that inner peace a little bit on the rough times.
It's like a warm hand on your mm-hmm. heart. Like, you need something that'll just give you that. So a lot of people, morning and evening routines kind of set, they bookend the day and they're important. Like, I feel like if I mess up my morning routine, when I get to work, I am not right. And it doesn't matter what time, like, I get up at 3, I do my morning routine every morning. Cause if I don't, I'll be straggly and crazy. Mm-hmm. So what is your eyes open mm-hmm. and what's your morning routine before you step out the door?
So my eyes open. Most times my alarm just went off. Yeah. I don't press snooze ever.
You don't believe in it.
Oh, I don't. Oh my gosh, I don't. If you set the alarm the night before when you were very much in the right mind So trust yourself, you know? And also, if I press snooze, then I'm actually mean to everyone else. Like, to be honest, it puts me in a bad space. So I wake up, I don't press snooze. I get up right away.
Right away.
Do not
feet
lay.
On the floor.
Oh, no. Feet on the floor right away. Uh-huh. I don't, and then I say my prayers. I'll mm-hmm. get up and I start, like, I go to the bathroom, I start brushing my teeth, getting ready for work, and I always ask myself this question. It's a two-part question. How or what do I want to feel today? Mm-hmm. So I've, like, gotten up, I've said my prayers, and then I anchor myself in this answer. Reason, because just like many folks, I start to be reactive mm-hmm. to everything. Mm-hmm. You know, if you take the train in New York City and it's late, you start to get frustrated, you're cursing in your head. Yep. You know, it just, somebody All gives you things. A weird look at the coffee shop and you're just like, who are you? You know, you're having this, you're making up,
right.
you're reacting.
Making up the whole conversation.
This whole thing.
Yeah.
And so what I've recognized is I don't like her. I don't mm-hmm. like the alley that's mm-hmm. reactive. I don't mm-hmm. like it. And I don't want to give people that much power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So in order not to be reactive, to be proactive, I anchor myself in that answer of either what or how do I want to feel today? Mm-hmm. And some days I can say, I just want to be quiet today.
Yeah.
And I let that be my, like, running thing. Mm-hmm. That is my morning routine. The reason for that, it sets the stage for the rest of the day. If there's a meeting and they ask any more questions, I'm not raising my hand because I'm quiet today.
Yeah.
And I feel safe. I feel good. Yeah. I feel confident and secure and aware. Mm-hmm. And I feel like those are the things that have really been helpful. Another layer that I recognize is important is on my way to work, I do feed myself. Like, I talk about, you know, books on audio mm-hmm. or music or sermons, but I put on good music. Mm-hmm. We talk about good music to wake up to.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I was listening to Lean On Me in a class. That just got me all in my feels.
Yes.
I was like, I'm about to save the world.
Yes. Yes.
I'm like, I'm going to go mm-hmm. out here and save the world. I'm going to be the, you know, I'm over here, like, smiling at everyone. They're like, okay, lady, calm down. But I put on, I have, like, my feel good playlist in the morning if I need that extra boost. Mm-hmm. And again, I let that vibe carry me throughout the day. And then at night when it's time to wind down, I go to bed at 9 o'clock. Let me be honest.
Yeah, good.
Honestly, 8:30 on a good night.
8:30, yes. Amen.
Like, there's nothing good happening out there
nothing.
After dark.
Nobody's interested.
No, nothing. So I tend to, like, I'm home. I love a good dinner. Yeah. I do wake up in the morning, I will say, while I'm doing my morning routine, I do figure out what I'm eating that night. I live for my food. It's like, so I'm like a little doggy.
So wait, are you taking stuff out of the freezer?
Well, sometimes whatever. I'll do that. Like when I wake up, I'm like, ooh, what's for dinner today? I told
that
you.
That is so hilarious.
Yes. And then I'm like, ooh, like certain days, I'm like, ooh, this is what we have. Like Fridays, we have Indian. I've talked about this. I'm like, oh, it's Friday. We're having Indian tonight. I'm going to order at 6:30. Like I live for it. Yes.
For the Indian at 6:30.
Yes. So in my morning, in my nighttime routine, I'm like, I'm pretty happy because I'm having the food that I've already planned so at 4 a.m. Yeah. But more importantly, I realize sometimes it's hard for my brain to shut off, even though I'm tired. So I tend to play word games or like these like mindless games, like Connections or Wordle or Wordzy, just to really decompress. I get in the bed. And then once I play my game, I put my phone away. I go back to doing breathing exercises because I think it brings down my levels.
Breathing is good,
And then I pray and then I am, if there was a Guinness Book of World Records on how quickly someone could sleep, I'd win.
You could fall, you really fall right asleep after that?
Literally in 60 seconds, less.
Wow. Someone once told me that if your mind is spinning and you can't sleep because you have so many thoughts, that you should sit there and say to yourself in your brain, I wonder what my next thought's going to be.
Oh my gosh,
and
really?
And if you say that, I wonder what's going to, it just, they start like dissolving away.
Huh.
You're like, I wonder what it's going to be. Oh, sure.
And then you wake up the next day.
And you're like, oh, it's morning.
It worked.
I agree with the music thing. The song I have on my wake up is the song that was introduced to me by Maria Shriver, who I adore. And it's By Thy Grace. And I said, Maria, why do you like this song? And she said to me, when I was going through my breakup, there was one song that soothed me. And it's this kind of random song that it's kind of chanty, weird song, but it's very soothing. And it reminds me that music can be like the, that's the warm hand on the heart. The music is what does it. And when I'm on my way home and I always take the train home, I always flood my head with music. And it is all of a sudden, I don't even care. Like all the things that might get stuck in your craw, like why is that person bumping me? And why is this? Because no one's paying attention to us or what, they're not here to disrupt our lives. They're just living theirs. And I sometimes get like, what was that about? And then I realize like, we're all in our own private Idahos in a weird way. Coming up, what a perfect day for Ally Love looks like after the break.
At the UPS store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
So let me just wrap up by asking you this. So this is called making space.
Yes.
So if Ally has a day that she knows is only for her, it is your husband is working. You open your eyes. You have not one, your calendar, which is now overcrowded, that you need to actually start editing. I feel like your life needs an edit, but your overcrowded calendar for some reason is blank.
Okay.
And it's a miracle. And you've opened your eyes and it's your day. And you can do anything you want with your day. What would you do how would you make space for yourself on that day?
I think the first thing that comes to mind is I'd get up and go to hot yoga.
You love hot yoga?
I love hot yoga.
You like sweating and
I love
just
it.
Doing
yeah,
the, all
it's
of
just,
it.
It
it's all of the things.
Yes, all of the things. I feel like I'd shower, come home. This is going to sound really funny, but I would have Chipotle.
Chipotle is awesome.
I'd have Chipotle.
Yeah.
And then I'd sit down with a cup of tea and like some biscuits and watch British Murder Mysteries.
I love
know
it.
This
no,
like,
it
this
doesn't.
Is my
I love it.
day.
Okay, British.
Like, I would binge watch, like, British Murder Mysteries. Like, and these are the ones that aren't scary, no. With, like, an endless cup of tea.
Yeah, where are you watching anything British Murder Mysteries?
Britbox, which is, I subscribe to Britbox.
I don't even know what British Murder Mysteries are. British people and
it's like
murders?
They recreate, like, Agatha Christie or, like, Sherlock Holmes. Like, I love Sherlock Holmes. Oh, my God.
You're so funny.
Weirdo, I know.
Okay, so you'd watch all that.
I watch all that.
So now it's 5 o'clock. Let's pretend.
Yes, now it's 5 o'clock. Okay. Wait, can I, like, have dinner with someone?
Oh, yeah. Yes, you
Now my husband can come back?
Yeah.
Then we'd have Indian.
You'd order Indian.
Oh, my God, I'd order
that you would
Indian.
Have planned it for in the morning.
Yes, I would have planned it in the morning, have Indian. And then after we finish eating, I would then open a book and start reading and go to bed early.
By the way, it sounds like a perfect day. I'm telling you, it sounds like a perfect day. Allie, I love you. I'm so happy you were on the podcast. Come back anytime.
Oh, thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Hey guys, thank you so much for listening and for coming on this journey with me. If you like what you heard, and I hope that you do, please give Making Space a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. And make sure you tell your friends. Follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. Making Space with Hoda Kotb is produced by Allison Berger and Alexa Casavecchia, with a special thanks to Ali Markowitz. Our production assistant is Megan Celio. Our associate audio engineer is Juliana Mastrarilli. Our audio engineers are Bob Mallory and Catherine Anderson. Original music by John Estes. Bryson Barnes is our head of audio production. Missy Dunlop Parsons is our executive producer. Charisse Williams Laredo is our senior producer.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.